This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the NBA Team Podcast. We are right in the thick of the playoffs like we always are, and it's getting even better because now we're down to a Final Four. Now it's getting salty. I'm one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reach, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Adam Murray.
Hello. Still have no voice. What a shock.
Totally no-sold my Oprah entrance.
Not going to buy into Oprah.
Do you even have the O Network on your, your guy?
I don't know. There's so many channels.
What's it called? OWN? It's called OWN, right?
Yeah.
Is that the One Warrior Nation? You remember that with the Ultimate Warrior?
The One Warrior Nation.
When it was like NWO and backwards?
Yeah, he started his own. And
and Hogan was staring at the mirror, and Hogan and like the Warrior was at the mirror. And oh, OWN. Well, speaking of owning, I think the NBA has absolutely owned the last couple of weeks with some pretty fascinating playoff series in the second round. We talked about the first round already, being that there were really not that many compelling matchups as the series went along. Most of them ended in either sweeps or five games, with the rare exception of the Spurs and the Clippers, which is just unbelievable. And now, but the second round, the conference semifinals, was pretty fascinating. Would you agree?
You could say it was because they went more than four games, but the games were just so either uneven or just boring. Mm-hmm. Like Atlanta, Washington, all comes down to last second shots, but before that, they all did nothing.
That's true. When people are like, well, man, if I could make a YouTube gallery or compilation of the last 2 minutes of all the Hawks Wizards series games, everyone would say, man, that was a great series. Well, you didn't watch the first 46 minutes when it was an absolute drag fest.
Yeah, it was one of them. They both shot 50 threes and made half of them. The next one, let's just not shoot and let's have 70 to 70 in the fourth quarter.
They were both elite defensive teams, so we kind of had the feeling it would slow down a bit, and it did. We'll talk about the Wizards another day since they're done now, since they lost the Atlanta Hawks in six games. But Pierce stepping in and doing what he did really shocked me. So it obviously showed that he was playing possum in the regular season.
Yeah, he hit three of the four game enders. It's not his fault. There was a cheesy layup, and one was a tenth of a second too late. Mm-hmm. But if we judge basketball games by the final 30 seconds, then wow, what a great series.
Well, and then poor John Wall. I mean, he played through it with the broken wrist and broken hand, but I mean, that is such a tough blow to bear. I can't even quantify how important that was when they lost him for those two games at home. That really did him in, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing as good as...
I know they had a chance in game 5 and 6, but not having John Wall in the Verizon, I think it's called the Verizon Center now, in Washington D.C. That was huge. If they had him for both of those games, they probably would have won both games.
Well, that's the thing. You lose him, he comes back, and credit to him for doing that, as opposed to saying, "Oh, I need to think about my $100 million coming up." But having him back at 60-70% really, it kept it close. But Ramon Sessions is good, but it was definitely the death blow of having him out.
Absolutely. We talked about that when we previewed it. We said if John Wall goes down or Ramon Sessions plugs in, as good as Ramon Sessions can play at times, that was going to do him in. And unfortunately it did. Even though Wall came back, he definitely wasn't 100%. He gave it his all, but you could tell he was he was trying to play hard or do his best, but you could tell that he wasn't all there. The jump shot wasn't there. His passing was still fantastic. Bradley Beal had some really good standout games. Pierce, we already talked about. I was very disappointed with their front court. I thought Nene played pretty weak, and I thought Marcin Gortat kind of disappeared.
Gortat and Nene were average. They knew they were supposed to. They didn't take over, but they didn't.
Atlanta's such a bad rebounding team. Why didn't they just feast them inside?
Well, because either A, Atlanta decided we're not going to take shots, or B, they decided to hit 50% of their threes. Mm-hmm. You know, how many rebounds can you get if you're just nailing every single one?
So, obviously, we're talking about the Wizards series where they lost to the Atlanta Hawks. The Atlanta Hawks move on. They are going to their first conference finals since the early 60s, back when Bob Pettit was still hitting 20-foot jump shots in a, you know, in a pineapple basket. It was a long time ago when the Atlanta Hawks went this far into the conference finals. You know, the Hawks' history as a franchise is fascinating because they've been so close, yet they're so far. You know what I'm saying? Because in the late 70s, UB Brown kind of got him back into the hunt with a really good defense, kind of some miscellaneous guys like John Drew and Dan Roundfield and Fast Eddie Johnson. Then we had the Kevin Lowry, Mike Fratello years with their all-star Dominique Wilkins. They had Doc Rivers, Spud Webb, Tree Rollins, you know, really good team. Everybody remembers the 1988 game 7 in the second round when they lost to the Celtics, and Larry Bird had a great fourth quarter, and Dominique kept going back and forth with them. Still a loss. 90s, you had Lenny Wilkins. You know, he had some pretty good teams with different makeup. You know, you had Steve Smith, Mookie Blaylock, Christian Laettner. They brought in Dikembe Mutombo in the late 90s. Do you have any memories about any of these teams as I rattle them off?
Oh, just, you know, the 80s, you know, going against Bird and whatnot. It's just one of those things you're in the wrong conference at the wrong time.
How good were they really?
They were the second or third best team in the conference.
Yeah, right behind Detroit and Boston and maybe Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee may have been better than them.
No, that's why I think they might be a little ahead of Milwaukee. Okay. That's why, you know, I say third's a solid. But it's just one of the things you get through the Celtics. Oh, you had Detroit, who's just going to smash you.
Yeah.
And then you fought through Detroit tooth and nail. Then Bird's just going to go drop 50 on you. It's just like there was no, there was just no way out of that 1-2.
Yeah. And the 90s teams with Lenny Wilkins were really good. Lenny Wilkins, I mean, all the guy did was win games as a coach. I think for a while he held the record for the most career wins as a coach. I mean, he was a certified winner everywhere he went, and it happened also in Atlanta. They actually had that best record in the league in 94, was the last time they did it, but they lost in the second round of the Indiana Pacers. This time they got through their second round travails, which they've just been struggling with for so very long, Adam. But let me ask this. We were talking about these other teams and how comparable they would be to their era. When I think about the 90s Hawks, I thought they were kind of like maybe like the third or fourth best team in the East, kind of like you said in the 80s. The era, I guess mini era that they had with Joe Johnson, Josh Smith, and Zaza Pachulia and Marvin Williams, I thought they were at best like the fourth best team in the East in that time frame too. You know, that would be the nicest way I would put it with when they had Mike Woodson and Larry Drew. How would you compare this Hawks team now with kind of like the top of the crop in the Eastern Conference and in the NBA overall? Now that you've seen a good chunk of
the funny thing is, the team now I don't think is good as the other teams, even the mini. Mm. The problem with the 2000, the 90s team was they were great players. They just weren't a team. It was like, okay, you know, Joe Johnson did his thing and you know, a young Horford and Josh Childress was the 3-and-D. And
you can make the same argument with Mookie and Steve Smith and Dikembe Mutombo, you know, star-driven.
Yeah, you just couldn't put it all together. This team is just like, we'll just shoot threes. There's no, I don't know. I don't see, you know, obviously there's no toughness in this team. And, you know, I think a lot, it's funny, like you're reading, like a lot of people are sort of shocked that Washington, you know, fought them to six games. They thought, oh, well, Atlanta's just going to destroy them. They've been destroying everybody. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you slow the game down, you get a little physical, and, you know, Atlanta's forced to, well, do a little more now. You can't make those, you know, their 27 passes become a little more difficult. And, you know, I don't think, you know, Teague, okay, he's good, but is he really as good as point guards in the past?
I think you make a good point about that because someone mentioned on the radio, and I agreed, is that when they won that game 5, that's the one where Pierce hit a 3 in the corner, but they gave up about 9 seconds left, and Horford got a putback. You know, toughness can be measured physically and mentally. Mentally, I think they gained a little bit of toughness by getting through Washington because Washington's such a great road team. But physically, I don't think they're really that tough of a team. And the point that they were making on the radio that I listened to and I agreed is that they won that game five, not really playing Atlanta Hawks basketball as we've seen it this year with the passing, with the fluidity. They didn't really win that way. They kind of won playing desperation basketball. And that's really what it comes – that's what it boils down to. That's when you boil everything down and you see everything rise, it really comes down to desperation offense and trying to do whatever you can to get an edge. We saw that last Thursday in Los Angeles with the Houston Rockets. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, and that's what they really need to do to take on Cleveland because, you know, again, people are like, oh, this is a great matchup for Atlanta, and they can, you know, I'm like, no, it's not.
No, it's not.
It's I don't see one place where you have, okay, Irving might be out for a bit. Yeah, but LeBron's going to be playing point guard the entire time.
Yeah, well, when you talk about desperation offense, nobody, based on the metrics, nobody has run as much ISO and low assist rate type of basketball, hero ball as they call it. No one has run it more than the Cleveland Cavaliers as they've gone through the playoffs with LeBron James. You can blame a lot of things for that, namely the injury to Kevin Love that took him out for the rest of the postseason with a shoulder surgery, thanks to Kelly Olynyk trying to pull his arm off like a barbarian. And then you had Kyrie Irving with the tendonitis in his knee. He went out early in game six. It didn't matter because for reasons I can't explain, the Chicago Bulls at home simply could not make any jump shots. It was almost depressing.
Yeah, it really was. But I just don't see, like, you can't run your style of game against that type of team.
Have you been impressed with Cleveland's defense? Or is it just the Bulls could never figure out an offense under Tom Thibodeau, where there are rumors that he might be on the way out?
Well, there's rumors he'd be on the way out, like the day he got in, pretty much. They just didn't like him. And, you know, not much you could do with injuries, but that was the thing, was, you know, which Derrick Rose are you getting? Who, yeah, Chicago didn't figure out Cleveland too much, and I'm not going to say Cleveland really beat them in the coaching department because, you know,
David Platt almost cost him a game personally.
Exactly, with the timeouts. And
did you have the problem with LeBron throwing him under the bus in the press conference?
No, because that's what it's a players' league.
Yeah, but outing him and saying that he wrote a dumb play and I overwrote it.
I'm not surprised.
Well, it's not surprising that it happened. Is it just surprising that he aired it out in public?
No, because this is the day and age we live in. Would you rather have him out it or have it go through, well, unnamed sources and it gets in the papers and, you know, it just becomes sort of a distraction? Mm-hmm. So I think it's just sort of, well, if I let the news out, like, you know, he blew it, it'll take this thing off of, well, there's dissension in the locker room and we heard reports that Blatt's writing plays that the team is overriding and... You know, it'd just be one of those things, like, just deal with it before it happens.
I look at the metrics with the team metrics comparison-wise with the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Atlanta Hawks. They're going to begin their series. They're going to get a lot of rest, Cleveland, which is a good thing for them because of all their injuries with the wear and tear. Also, remember, Iman Shumpert suffered a little bit of a – got dinged up a little bit in that Chicago series. They're going to start Wednesday on TNT, so that means Cleveland gets about 6 days rest. The Hawks get five. But when I look at the team metrics, this is what I see. Points per game, it's pretty close. Actually, Cleveland actually averages more points per game than the Hawks do. Field goal percentage, they were very close. Three-pointers made, even though the Hawks are a great three-point shooting team, Cleveland really isn't that far behind, which is what really impressed me as I saw them in that Chicago series. They were able to sink threes in clutch situations, regardless of whether it was J.R. Smith, Matthew Dellavedova, Iman Shumpert. They were just always able to find that extra point that the Bulls just simply can't.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, the Bulls just had their own problems of their own trying to... Really, I don't know. Bulls just had lineup problems, just sticking with guys too long. Then
I think there were too many hands in the cookie jar. Like, I felt like they were trying to do everything.
Too much second guessing, I think.
It was a show about nothing, or a team about nothing. Like, you got to – I like that, the second guessing, because it felt like they were saying, okay, we want to run fast now that we have Gasol as a great passing big. Oh, well, our defense is sinking, so we got to go back to playing big. Oh, well, Derrick Rose is playing well, so we're going to be guard-oriented. And it's like – you got to figure out what you want to do. And by the time they realized that they had to increase their defense to try to slow down Cleveland, their offense was so bogged down and so reliant on Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler that they could not get any points in the paint. None.
Exactly, because you're too busy trying to, you know, just in a game of chess, they're just sort of two moves behind the entire time. And, you know, he made it to game six, but it just didn't seem like, it really didn't seem like Chicago would be like, oh, well, they seem like a threat.
Yeah. Defensively, points allowed, Cleveland was 12th in the league. The Hawks are 4th. That's not that far apart. Field goal percentage defense, though, the Hawks have a clear advantage. They were a lot better than Cleveland was. Steals per game, the Hawks were much better. Blocks per game, the Hawks were way better. There's two advantages for Cleveland, and we kind of hinted at it already with the superstar aura in Cleveland and their ability to, you know, get things done. One of them is rebounding, and that's going to be the Hawks' problem forever until the series is over, is that the Hawks are just a horrible rebounding team. It showed against Washington. I just think Randy Whitman did a really poor job of trying to play big inside with the Hawks, because I think they could have done more to try to flood the paint up against Atlanta, and he simply didn't do it. He was too reliant on Wall and Beal. But that's just my 2 cents. That was just my 2 cents. Cleveland was 19th in rebounding. So even though they're better than the Hawks, they're not like that much better. I know Tristan Thompson has really played well on the offensive rebounding department. He may have made himself some money in the postseason. But do you think having that combination of Mozgov, Thompson, and then also LeBron, who had some great rebounding numbers against Chicago, do you think that's really going to stymie Atlanta more than what Washington was able to do with Gortat and Nene?
Yeah, because if you're playing LeBron at the 3, you're going to put Kyle Korver on him?
Well, I think they're going to put Damari Carroll on him. And if that means Damari Carroll doesn't get a lot of baskets because LeBron starts ISOing on him, then I guess they're just going to allow that to happen. You know, Jimmy Butler did about as good of a job as he possibly could of doing the one-on-one defense early in the series and not slowing down on offense. The problem with Jimmy is that in that 6th game, he could not make anything.
He was out of gas.
Yeah, I agree.
Exactly.
I thought he was out of gas. Like, Damari Carroll, the same thing's going to happen to him. And then they might have to switch him with Korver, maybe bring Korver in as help, maybe play a little more Kent Bazemore. I mean, I don't know what you do there, you know. That's a tough one.
That's also a good point that you mentioned. You know, Chicago sort of had an issue when they did run out of gas with Jimmy Butler. They didn't have let's switch to this plan now. They're just like, ah, crap.
This is what they don't understand about the playoffs. I don't think any analysts or any of the people that look at depth, team depth doesn't make a difference if you can't stop the best player on the court. It makes no difference.
It makes no difference if, you know, that's your – you can either go, okay, we're just going to let LeBron score. Let him score 70 for all we care. We'll just stop everybody else. But nobody goes for that strategy. It's all, well, we can still do it. We'll still find a way. Somebody can still step up, right? Right, guys? Anybody? And I think the same thing might happen to Carroll, and that happened to Butler. And
the matchup at the guard spot's interesting because we've seen two kind of semi-breakout. We talked about this when the playoffs started. What kind of breakouts were we going to see? I don't remember the picks we made. I bet some of them were I think I picked Damari Carroll, which actually was a little bit of an omen. But the one that's interesting is that in the backcourt between Cleveland and Atlanta, you got Kyrie Irving, who is having his knee problems, but he's still great. When he plays well, he's very, very hard to guard because he's such a great shooter, whether it's off the dribble or on the catch. And then you got Jeff Teague. Now, Jeff Teague has had a couple of bad games in the postseason, but he's really bailed him out in a couple of the other ones that they've won. But then look at the backups. You know, Cleveland has Matthew Dellavedova. Dellavedova played great in the game 6 that clinched it against Chicago. Atlanta's got Dennis Schroeder. Without Dennis Schroeder, they do not win game 5 against Washington.
Exactly.
So what do you see there? And is there a possibility that we'll see the both of them play side by side?
What, play a sort of small Irving and Dellavedova?
Maybe, because the Hawks are going to be such a bad rebounding team anyway. That do you think that they might try to, let's say, give a rest to Millsap and try to play Teague and Schroeder if Cleveland comes out with Dellavedova and Irving instead of
Jalen? The only way they can do that is if Cleveland goes small.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you could do that is if you have LeBron playing the four and you put Iman Shumpert in to maybe slow down Korver if he's hot. But you can't. The thing is, Atlanta can't go. They can't do this because of the potential size differential. You can't just. You can't leave all that size on the table, especially for a poor rebounding team, and you're just going to make it even worse.
They've been talking so much about how LeBron has been having to deal with the injuries, and I mean, I am commending LeBron James because he has struggled with a lot of his key teammates being injured and having to play through it. He was incredible against the Chicago Bulls. Incredible. I know that people criticize him for taking 30 shots in game four. I wish he took 60 shots. You know, if you're the best player, you do, like I just said earlier, you do what you gotta do. And I commend him for that. But do we worry so much about LeBron and doing his isolation game that we don't talk about how good Cleveland is as an overall team? Do you think that that's been lost in the discussion?
Well, pretty much, because the same way in Miami, all we talk about is LeBron and his ISO game, and, oh, it's the Heat, and you have Bosh and Wade there, too, and you forget about that. The same way you forget about Irving. It's like, Irving's been doing, his first one, he might be a little shaky. No, he did pretty good so far.
And Kevin Love was, too.
And nobody's, well, that's against the Celtics, who had no rebounding, but, you know. Everybody was doing good. Nobody's smaller because just all you know, the only one you're going to hear is LeBron. Nobody cares about anybody else on this team.
Do you think it has a lot more to do with LeBron being the distributor, the rainmaker, or do you think it's that Cleveland actually does have good players and now we're starting to see that come to fruition? Guys like Thompson, guys like Dellavedova, you know, even Iman Shumpert, who never really played meaningful minutes in New York.
Well, I'll put it this way: has Thompson really stepped his game up?
Well, he's a good offensive rebounder.
He's a rebounder, but
it's one of those things where I think Chicago didn't game plan for him well, and he kind of feasted on him a bit. Especially when Pau Gasol pulled his hamstring, because he wasn't able to out-hustle Thompson.
Yeah, because it's just like, you know, in theory, once that happened, Thompson should just be eating everybody alive. And, you know, with Love out, okay, now's his time to shine. And even, you know, the round one, it was just, yeah. Is he gonna? You know, he's not gonna get the max money or close to max money, and he's just, you know, he's now slowly relegating himself to that. Okay, he's gonna be that defensive guy who's not gonna score.
Do you see both of these teams as sort of like a weird version of the little guy? Because I know Cleveland went to the finals in 07, they got swept by the Spurs, and they got LeBron, who's a superstar, and they got Kyrie Irving, who's a superstar, and even the Atlanta Hawks had four all-stars this year, but does it kind of feel like these are kind of the scrappier teams, the teams that sort of had to fight their way from the beginning to get to where they were?
No, because it's just the Cleveland LeBrons, and Atlanta, you know, the thing about having nobody care about your team is you could either be first place or you could be last place, and nobody's going to be commenting on you.
Mm-hmm.
So
it also takes the scrutiny off media-wise.
Yeah, there's really no pressure. You're just going to go out, play your game. Oh, we're hitting everything. Oh, we're first place. We're, you know, 20 games up over everybody. It's the same talk as if you're 20 games back. So I think it's just the lack of pressure in Atlanta might be sort of to their benefit.
Which Atlanta Hawk has impressed you the most? And it doesn't necessarily have to be their awesome starting five, which has gotten a lot of the ink for them. But which Atlanta Hawk has impressed you the most?
Well, it would obviously be Damari Carroll, who's...
Not Al Horford, not Dennis Schroeder.
Horford, you know, he came back from his injury like I said he would.
He's been an all-star before, though.
Yeah, he's been an all-star, but everyone's like, oh, he's done. I'm like, no, he's not done. Millsap sort of has peaked out, I think.
I agree.
Jeff Teague, is he an elite point guard now?
I think he's like just below Mike Conley.
He's that 6 to 10 range.
Like Mike Conley, I think would even especially after I watched him in the series with Golden State, I think Mike Conley's an elite point guard. Elite.
Yeah, Mike Conley's he's like, you know, he's moved up to like number five, and
Jeff Teague is like right below
him. And there's like 6 through 10, and just a group there. And if you're in that group, okay, you're good, but you're not the elite yet. And I don't know. The one thing that sort of just impressed me was
nothing impressed
me. I don't know.
I liked how Al Horford played in the clutch. I didn't think he had that in him because he didn't really play in a lot of truly important playoff games up to this point. I know the Hawks had gotten to the second round before with Horford when he played alongside Josh Smith and Joe Johnson, but I felt like Horford really had to step in and play hard in order to win the game, and I thought he took that role on mightily, and I didn't think he was capable of doing it. That was against the Washington Wizards, a team that the one thing that was impressive is winning that game at home against the Wizards, because the Wizards were such a great road team in the playoffs for whatever reason. They rarely ever lose on the road in the playoffs. So I knew that Game 5 was going to be tough for them. When they won Game 5 with seconds to go, I knew it was over. I knew the Hawks were going to take them out.
Yeah, that was it. But Horford, again, it's kind of hard for me to be impressed if that's what I expected you to do going into it. It's like, maybe I just thought Horford is better. Maybe I just think he's better than everyone else thinks he is. But that's why I'm just like, I'm running out of people to think of.
Oh, what's the matchup to watch? You can't say LeBron.
The matchup to watch is, I'm going to say Tristan Thompson versus Millsap. Mm-hmm. Because I think if you slow Millsap down, that's going to, if you isolate him a little bit, then that kills your rebounding even more.
Yeah, and if you got to get those rebounds back by putting Mike Scott, who's sort of a stretch four type, if you put him on Tristan Thompson, then that's not going to help you in the rebounding department.
Yeah, because like, let's say you get Millsap two quick fouls. That's doom for the team. You got really, you can't, Perelantic and Mike Scott, and, they're not going to keep up.
The one I talked about it earlier already, but the one I'm watching is that kind of that backcourt combo with Kyrie and then Matthew Dellavedova behind him, and then Jeff Teague with Dennis Schroeder behind him. However it accumulates, whichever team gets the advantage there, I would have to think is going to win the game, because they're going to be able to control the offense. Even though LeBron does have that ability to just sort of take over a game by taking the ball out of the guards' hands and just kind of controlling the offense. Atlanta, the one thing Atlanta struggles with, I don't think they're really good at controlling tempo. I think they sort of let the other team run their stuff, and Atlanta decides, okay, well, whatever pace they're running, we can play it and get just as many open shots and threes, whether we're playing fast or we're playing slow. So if they let Cleveland play fast and they let LeBron control the pace of the game, I think that's going to be doomsday for them.
Oh yeah, you can't let Cleveland get hot.
Mm-hmm. And they do get hot. They do, especially from the 3-point line with J.R. Smith. J.R. Smith is just one of those unconscious players. Like, he does stupid things, but man, he makes incredibly tough shots.
Well, he's gonna shoot 12 anyway. So You just hope some of them go in.
Is J.R. Smith a good player or a really good player?
He's a good player, but what's the difference between him and Lou Williams and Isaiah Thomas and every other just bench, just 3-point, just, I'm just going to shoot. I'm a black hole.
What would spell doom for Cleveland against Atlanta? What could happen to them barring an injury that could really do them in?
I was going to say another injury. That's pretty much an injury or a suspension. Just, Cleveland, I see Cleveland in 5. Mm. I don't see this much of a competition, but I'm going down with my picks. I still don't like Atlanta. I never did.
Is it the LeBron factor? Because, in 2011, they played the Bulls, a real, a team-oriented type of team, Even though Derrick Rose won MVP, they beat him in 5. The Pacers were very team-oriented when he was in Miami, and they played him 2 years in a row in the conference finals, and the Heat beat him both times. Do you kind of see something similar here, or do you think this might be that one team-oriented squad that really takes out LeBron's guys?
No, because I can't see Korver and Carroll and Teague just they're all-stars. How? If this is what we're reduced to calling all-stars these days, the 90s is, they're just rolling over in their graves right now going, what the hell is this? Mm-hmm. You're calling Kyle Korver an all-star? What does he do? And I just don't see, there's just a LeBron factor. Mm-hmm. If he gets injured, okay, fine, Cleveland's done.
Do you think that, because I know Atlanta is the home of, you know, the NBA TV studios, the TNT studios. Do you feel a sort of kind of bias there, especially given that they're going to be starting kicking off the series hosting in the studio right across the street from the Phillips Arena, basically? Do you kind of get that notion that, you know, even though it's like kind of nameless crew guys, except for Underdog, who works in the back and Shaq always makes jokes about, they're all Hawks fans because they're all from the region. Do you get that feeling from TNT that they're secretly rooting for, you know, the Atlanta Hawks, especially with Turner connection?
Well, the crew can root all they want. It's just who's going to show up in the stadium?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they've had, you know,
the crowds have been okay.
It's been okay. So
yeah,
what would happen if a couple of thousand Cleveland fans decide to get tickets? You know, make it a little louder. Might be a little different. Just the problem is, you know, you're not selling out games yet still as the number one seed. So, you know, it's as much as the TV crew wants you to win, you need people in the stands to go maybe, out.
That might be my conspiracy theory type of part of the show, because I don't think Adam Silver would allow TNT to just have like Hawks banners hanging over the damn over the damn studio while they're hosting or broadcasting the Eastern Conference Finals, where it's the Hawks and another team. But
well, that's just, you know, it's just happened to be where they're located. It's just also Adam Silver wouldn't, you know, LeBron versus anybody will bring in more money for the league as opposed to nameless Atlanta players. So if you want a conspiracy, it'll be, you know, pushing LeBron through again just because he's famous.
Which is which you think is going to happen, so the conspiracy continues.
Well, you know, you have a conspiracy if they win, you have a conspiracy if they lose. Oh, gee.
I told you, we're really good at this. You know, you have to back Adam Silver into a corner somehow because he hasn't made a mistake yet. But that's going to be a fun series between the Atlanta Hawks and the Cleveland Cavaliers, with the Atlanta Hawks obviously having the home court advantage. That begins Wednesday night on TNT. And now we're going to be talking about the Western Conference Finals, where things got really, really interesting in the last week. Am I right?
Yeah, I have not seen a collapse like that, and you don't see many teams coming back from 3-1.
Well, the Rockets have done it twice, right?
Second team in history after the Celtics, and
I got reminded of it because the NBA TV network is promoting Clutch City, which is going to be a documentary about those Houston Rockets. If anybody wants to go back, we did this podcast called The Other Guys, and one of the teams that we constantly talked about in that podcast episode was the Houston Rockets, because they had a lot of other guys, a lot of kind of like people that kind of nameless players that made a big impact for Houston. And in 1995, which was 20 years ago, and that's why they're doing the documentary, it's a 20-year anniversary of their last championship, they came back from a 3-1 deficit against a really talented Phoenix Suns team that had Barkley, Dan Majerle, Kevin Johnson, Wayman Tisdale, rest in peace. That was Paul Westphal's last game as the head coach of the Suns, I believe. What happened here? And we flashed 20 years now, totally different team. James Harden's a star, even though he didn't win MVP. You got Dwight Howard there. You got a lot of other really talented guys, Terrence Jones, Josh Smith, Corey Brewer, Jason Terry. Really good, but they were down in the depths. Let's start there. How did they get in that position in the first place with the Clippers?
I think the Clippers just beat themselves. That was just, you know, the whole series was so disjointed, and you're losing by 30, then you're winning by 30.
So you're saying the best team didn't win?
The best team won game 7 because, you know, that's the game that matters.
What does that say about Doc Rivers? Because this is the second time, because he did it back with Orlando. It's a totally different team with Tracy McGrady. But this is the second time that he's lost a 3-1 series lead.
That's just really sort of, it's not unexcusable. It's just
bad luck.
The way you just collapsed on game 6, and that just sort of demoralizes
you.
Well,
they were up so big. That was what made it so shocking. If it was a close game in the fourth quarter, then the Clippers kind of increased it to 8 or 10 points, and then the Rockets make like a desperate comeback, then maybe it would have been like, it would have been more acceptable. But
not only were you up, but you wind up still losing by like 12. I don't think it was by like,
they were up. They were outscored 40-15 in the fourth.
Yeah, and like even when Houston took the lead, they're still like, we don't know what we're doing. What is this big orange thing?
who are the real Houston Rockets? Is it the Houston Rockets that got pounded by LA on the road? Is it the Houston Rockets team at home that was able to clinch it in game seven and James Harden got to the free throw line a lot, played great? Or in the fourth quarter of that sixth game when they started to play desperation offense with their three-point shooting, which is what they're best at, and they started dropping bombs on the Clippers? What Houston Rockets team is the real Houston Rockets?
That's the question, is they sort of were Jekyll and Hyde. Mm-hmm. And if you're relying on, you know, the savior of Josh Smith.
Well, when you rely on Dwight Howard in the paint on offense, you will get Jekyll and Hyde. Because there are games where he's great at dunking and getting easy baskets, and then there are games where he's not. And James Harden is a little bipolar, too, as a scorer.
Yeah, and, you know, plus his anemic defense, so.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know, it's just, it was really relying on your other guys, on Smith, Brewer, and Ariza.
Oh, I totally forgot about Trevor Ariza. That was a great signing. People thought that was just a Band-Aid because they lost Chandler Parsons to Dallas. Do you think that was one of the best signings of the offseason?
It was a good one because nobody said Ariza was bad. It was just sort of, you know, they were hurt. Oh, well, we lost him. Mm-hmm. He was a cheaper alternative. Who, you know, everybody, every year they keep saying, well, this is his last year because of his legs.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's giving you, you know, he's there. If I'm not mistaken, he's been pretty much the only constant on the court.
Well, he's a great three-point shooter, too. You know, and defensively, he's got length. So you could put him on the top guard like they did with Chris Paul a lot. You know, now they're not,
but I'm saying he's been on the court, I think, more. I've seen him on there more than I've seen Howard.
Yeah. Then when Pablo Prigioni's on the court, yikes.
Yeah, it's just like, why? And that's why I'm sort of just like amazed they even made it this far, because when you're relying on him and you see Clint Capela in there, it's just like, why? No.
Capela is, like we said, all athlete, nothing more.
Yeah, it's just, well, you're that European guy. Do you know how to play basketball? You know, maybe you should have stayed in Europe a year or two. And
you know what fascinates me, though, about James Harden is that, you know, there's that great – everybody remembers that stat about Kobe Bryant, that when he scored so many points with the Lakers, there was a more likely chance that the Lakers either lost the game or the game was close. Whereas if he takes less shots, they're more likely to win because that means the offense is flowing freer. If you notice, when James Harden scores a ton of points in the Houston Rockets offense, the Rockets almost always win. Is there any way to connect that for me, if you could?
How it's different with them?
Yeah, like with the Rockets offense compared to like a situation where it's like LeBron. LeBron scored 15 points against the Bulls, but they won anyway because he facilitated. Like, how is it different with James Harden, even though his assist numbers were high this year? He's become a better two-way player on defense. But why is it that when Harden goes off and has one of those great games that they always win?
Because the team runs through him. The team does not run through Kobe or those other guys. And when he's just saying, fuck it, I'm going to go shoot 40 shots. Mm-hmm. It's just him taking the offense.
Well, let's correct that. Maybe it doesn't run through him. It revolves around him. Can we say that?
No, I say it runs through him because of his assist totals. Mm-hmm. It can't revolve around him if you're still putting up, you know, what is it, like 8 assists a game. That means you're running it through somebody if it's his job to dish it out as much as he is.
Yeah, but why do you think it's the free throw shooting? Because I've seen some games in that Clipper series where he shot the ball poorly, but because he can do that flailing and get to the line, it saved him.
Yeah, the free throws do help, but again, I'm just going to stay with my steadfast on the line. He's having the ball, therefore it's going through him for him to get to the line and for him to get all those free throws.
Okay, we're going
to leave. So you can't, you know, you can't be passing it off and expect to get to the line.
This is going to be the last thing we ask about the Rockets-Clippers series. It's the most fascinating series of the four. It was the only one that went 7 games. How big of a collapse was the Clippers' collapse in general? Like, where would you rank it?
Huge.
Like, okay, then let's go pro sports. Like the NHL ones when they lost, when they were up 3-0 in the Yankees in 2004, and then maybe like an in-game collapse when they were up 20. Like, how big of a collapse was the Clippers losing a 3-1 series lead and blowing that huge lead in Game 6? Like, where would you rank that?
Blowing the 3-1 isn't so much as bad as
just... But it's pretty bad, dude. I mean, it's only happened about maybe 10 or 15 times.
Yeah, it's happened, you know, it's happened only, yeah, 9 or 10 times, but it was just the way they lost Game 6, because, you know, that's a 99% success rate right there.
Mm-hmm. And they looked and they better than them. They looked better than them. They did. You know,
they did, baby. It looks like the most times they just outplayed Houston all around, and just that utter six-game collapse, they were not able to bounce back from in Game 7. As much as they tried, you could just see, like, you know, like, I'm just watching. I'm like, oh, there's Game 6 in the back of their minds.
Mm-hmm. They were playing tentative because they didn't want to make a mistake.
Are we gonna blow it now? We don't want to blow it again. We can't be that team who blew it twice.
Yes.
And, you know, they got in their heads, and that game over.
Okay, we're done with that. Now the Rockets are back in the Western Conference Finals for the first time since 1995. They won the title that year. They played a really good San Antonio Spurs team that year, a team that had the league MVP in David Robinson. Well, James Harden was the runner-up for MVP. Now, let's go back, because 95, that was the year. Remember that one? That was when Hakeem Olajuwon was the MVP the year before. Robinson won the MVP. They awarded him the trophy right in front of Hakeem, and Hakeem told Kenny Smith, "That's my trophy." And then he went off for the entire series against the Spurs and just totally outplayed David Robinson. James Harden was the runner-up for the MVP. He was deservedly so the second-place guy, I would say. Steph Curry, for the Golden State Warriors, who beat the Memphis Grizzlies in six games in a tougher series than we thought they would have. Steph Curry won the MVP. Now, he's already been awarded the trophy, so we're not going to see that ad nauseum. What kind of motivation is there? Like, do you think that really is in their minds that James Harden's going to go out and try to prove to Steph Curry he the real MVP?
No, because I think that's so far behind. And after a, you know, a tough fought seven game series, I think it would be honestly better focused if they didn't go through Harden for the championships here.
Mm-hmm. Well, they didn't go through Harden to come back in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, you have them on the bench, which was, you know, everyone was like, how is that possible?
Kevin McHale said, okay, well, if we come back, then I'm just going to go with this lineup and we're just going to keep going.
Yeah, these guys want it, and okay. But, you know, the big matchup here, which in theory would be Dwight Howard versus a lot of inferior centers.
You mean for the Warriors?
Yes.
Would you consider Andrew Bogut an inferior center?
In theory, to Dwight Howard?
Well, everybody is, because Dwight Howard, like, only that would only be guys like an Andre Drummond or a Hassan Whiteside, somebody who's so oversized with a crazy wingspan that they might be able to match up man for man, or DeAndre Jordan, like a man.
As I said, DeAndre Jordan's was a good matchup for him,
yeah,
because he's a defensive guy. You have, you know, David Lee and Bogut, and
yeah, but Dwight is such a bad offensive player now. You know, it's all dumps and alley-oops, you know, and maybe some junk layups off of missed shots, which Houston does a lot of because they shoot so many threes, so there's a lot of long rebound attempts with scattered offense. So if they try to run things through Dwight inside, that might be a recipe for disaster, because the Warriors, sneakily enough, are one of the best rebounding teams in the league.
They're one of the best rebounding teams, but they can't go small at all because you need the size
to battle
for Howard,
yeah,
so
to battle T. Jones and Josh Smith, and
yeah, so you like can't Howard. Play. You can't play, you know, hack a Howard, because you can't have Bogut sit on the bench. And okay, Spites comes in, and then you can't have Draymond Green coming over to cover him.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to play big in your backcourt, and you put in Andre Iguodala, Kevin McHale's going to hack the Andre Iguodala.
Yeah, yeah. No, then you also have Ariza and Terrence Jones and Josh Smith, who are providing big size. This is a very big team.
Does Trevor Ariza guard Steph Curry, or does he guard Klay Thompson?
Well, he has to be Klay Thompson.
I think that's the big decision for Kevin McHale here.
And that's really a tough thing, as Harden's not going to really guard anybody.
It's a tough choice. I mean, because that means you're leaving Pablo Prigioni, Jason Terry, and maybe Corey Brewer at times on the double on Steph Curry. That could really doom them.
It could doom them, but Corey Brewer is also 6'9".
Or does Harden just say, fuck it, I'm the man, I'm doing this, I'll take Curry.
I that could be the case. Harden's gonna be like, look, I'll give up 35 points, I'll still score 35 points to you know, negate it. Mm-hmm. So I think Harden will have that, you know, he'll step up, he'll have that swagger, you will, as you say.
Numbers wise, with the team stats, Warriors were first in points. Warriors were first in a lot of stuff. They were first in points per game. The Rockets were seventh. Good offense for the Rockets. Field goal percentage, big difference. Warriors were first. Rockets were 22nd. Three-pointers made, though, the Rockets were the best three-point. In terms of three-pointers made, not percentage, the Rockets set a record this year. So, obviously, they're better than the Warriors, but the Warriors were second. So, you know, and that's really what killed the Memphis Grizzlies. They could not stop the three ball, and they could not counter it with their own. But that's not going to help against the Rockets, because the Rockets are actually a better three-point shooting team than the Warriors are. The Warriors, though, do have trouble at the free throw line with getting to the line, whereas the Rockets don't, because you got Howard, who gobbles up a lot of fouls, and you got James Harden, who is the most prolific free throw shooter in the league. Assists-wise, close. Defense, pretty close also. Blocks, the Warriors are better. Rebounds, the Warriors are better. Do you see anything there that might kind of raise a red flag for either of those teams?
Well, the red flag is the free throw discrepancy. You know, you're a jump shooting team, you're not going to get free throws, and all it would take is a little just let's play big and let's get somebody in foul trouble.
Yeah, but what's the chances of the Warriors shooting a low percentage against a Rockets team that's very hands-off on defense when it comes to the press? You know, they got desperate against the Clippers, and they forced missed shots, and good for them. That was pretty brave of them to get super aggressive when their backs were against the wall because they were desperate. But are they going to be able to do that to the Warriors? Because the Warriors shoot a high percentage against pretty much everybody.
Yeah, they play a high percentage. But what I'm saying is if you slow it down with free throws and get free points, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of you could run and gun all you want. But if I'm getting, you know, point here, point there, getting free throws, getting somebody in foul trouble, you know, how good is your running gun then once you're forced to put in a Barbosa and hoping an Iguodala shows up?
But that might limit possessions. So you're saying that the Rockets might have to go against type because they were one of the top teams in possession.
Well, the Rockets can speed it up. That's the thing. Memphis's problem was you're a slow-down team. They had no turbo gear.
Yeah. You made a football analogy about that with the Grizzlies, right?
Yes. With the Grizzlies, you know, it's just if you're just a running team, you're down two touchdowns, you can't run the ball to get back into it.
So when Curry hit that three at the end of the third quarter and they were down double digits in the fourth, it was like,
how are you going to come back if you're still like, well, let's grind down the clock and get our shot?
You're not going to get enough possessions to come back.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think Houston sort of has to slow it down to get it in their favor because I don't think they can run with them.
Yeah, but we look at these team stats, and those are nice little gaudy numbers. But you talked about this in the playoffs, and I think you were right. The regular season was a little bit of an outlier altogether for the Rockets because they played most of the season without Dwight Howard. With Dwight, they do play differently. Do you think that might help them with slowing games down?
Yes.
You have to slow. I think the Memphis Grizzlies had the right idea. I really do, Adam. They just didn't have the horses. Do you think
slowing
them down?
They didn't have the horses. They didn't have a J.R. Smith who's just going to shoot threes. Mm-hmm. They didn't have that shooter. And as long as you have Harden and you have Josh Smith, once you tell them, okay, guys, just start shooting, they're not going to even – halfway through that sentence, they've already lobbed up three air balls. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just – they will turn it on in a half second. But I think in order to throw Golden State off its rhythm, they have to slow it down to start.
You can't speed them up. You just cannot speed up the Golden State Warriors.
You can't.
The Pelicans did that, and they burned and fried.
Exactly. You can't let Golden State get into their rhythm.
Mm-hmm. If the Golden State Warriors lose, a 67-win team, best team statistically across the board, if they lose to the Houston Rockets, why did it happen?
Inexperience. You have a first-year coach. You have players who have never been – you have players who've never been the man. They've always been the underdogs. So, you know, it could be too lofty expectations and, you know, well then what – you know, how did you lose? And I don't expect them to lose. It would be very surprising. Because Houston, as good as they are, they have a lot of flaws. And Golden State has a lot less. But if Golden did, it was just because of the inexperience. And you're going against a savvy you know, a savvy veteran team, a savvy veteran coach.
Do you think the franchise history there with the Rockets having more championship experience? I know it was eons ago, so this is more of like a macro versus micro. But do you think that ever factors in a situation like this? Do you think that's more of the basketball gods?
No, I don't think it's the basketball gods, because the way the history has changed so much, those teams now, then, even though it was just 20 years ago, are just unrecognizable to today's NBA standards, I think.
Yeah, but when you look at the teams, like only nine have won since 1980. The Rockets are one of them. The Warriors, the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Atlanta Hawks are not. Like, do you think that is in their favor? Karma, as they say.
All those teams just made bad decisions because they, you know, were in the high lottery year in, year out, and Houston had a star. There's a reason only, you know, a few teams won, is because you have, you know, somebody like Michael Jordan who's going to win multiple titles. Somebody like Tim Duncan who's just going to hog all the championships.
Was the Dwight Howard signing worth it? Daryl Morey is in the conference finals like he promised.
He's there. That's what he wanted. And what did you really give up to get him?
Nothing, because they got him out of free agency because he was
with the Lakers. They didn't do that panic trade like they tried to last year. Mm-hmm. The 2 years ago, I mean. You just signed him to the max deal. He went there, surprisingly. And
the year before, you pulled off the deal of the century. Let's be honest. It's the deal of the century, getting hardened in that trade.
Yeah, for garbage.
Mm-hmm. I hate to pick on Sam Presti, who just hired Billy Donovan as his new head coach in Oklahoma City, to see if they could try to savor that before Kevin Durant leaves in free agency. But that deal is looking more and more like the deal when the New Orleans Jazz traded away the draft picks, and the draft picks they used, they got Magic Johnson and James Worthy. You know, it started to look that bad. You would agree?
Well, it kind of all came down to the draft picks were absolutely nothing, and
then instead of getting Terrence Jones, they got Jeremy Lamb.
You did instead of people look at it this way. You didn't want to pay Harden because you didn't want to go over the cap. Mm-hmm. Over the tax. So basically Harden's money is going to go to Enes Kanter. So basically you traded Harden for Kanter, and that's, you know, not a good trade.
Let's play dummy for a second. Does this mean that Harden is better than Kevin Durant or Russell Westbrook because he got further by himself? I mean, we're playing dummy here. We're playing hot take.
I would say they could say yes on one hand, mm-hmm. because he was the third man there, and he said, I'll be the number one guy, and was, and, you know, according to some people, should have been the MVP. Some people, I mean me, and apparently nobody else.
No, you weren't alone. If you look at the total tally, I think Curry won by about 300 total votes, but Curry got so many first place votes that's what did it for him. But Harden was second in every other ballot.
Yeah.
You know.
So you could say on one hand, yes, he's better because he did elevate himself past where those two guys were. On the other hand, you could say no, because both Durant and Westbrook got injured since then. And Durant, you know, what can we say about him? Because of his injury this year, and Westbrook has had injuries.
And also, the central casting is great in Oklahoma City, but the supporting cast, not so much. And in Houston, we questioned that supporting cast when they lost Chandler Parsons, and they lost a couple of other guys, but they plugged them up so quickly in the when the regular season started with Brewer and Smith that all of a sudden you just had this really good team. You know, that's a good team.
What we also said was, can their supporting cast step up? And we've seen improvements from Terrence Jones. We've seen, Corey Brewer was a great in-season trade.
Clint freaking Capella, a rookie.
Capella is in the playoffs playing minutes. Mm-hmm. Who, you know, from the beginning of the season was like, what is he doing?
He's never played before.
You're getting quality.
Did Kevin McHale save his job?
Yes.
Would he have been fired had he lost to the Clippers?
I don't think he would have, because I think there are too many coaches out there, too many open positions. Mm-hmm. So you're, you know, the problem is when you fire a coach, you have to figure I now have to go recruit against these other, you know, New Orleans is also an attractive spot. Orlando is looking pretty good these days. Mm-hmm. So you might not get the coach you want.
And Chicago might be opening up soon.
Chicago might be opening up, and that's a great spot. Now all of a sudden that, you know, well, you didn't get as far as I want to. Well, now who are you going to – you have to now get a retread as opposed to getting that guy you want.
When it comes to three-point shooting, I think for the Warriors-Rockets series, I think that at the end of the day, it's coming down to quality over quantity. The quality is Golden State because they shoot so well. The quantity is the Rockets because they shoot so many and they don't give a shit. They just love dropping three bombs. What do you think is going to win out there?
Warriors. Warriors in six, five, maybe.
When you watch the Memphis series, the Warriors actually throughout the playoffs has actually shot the least amount of threes. I guess you could kind of take that to pace of play because of the Memphis series going six games, while the Pelican series was a four-game sweep, so not as many games. But do you think it kind of shows that the Warriors are not a one-trick pony?
No, they had to adjust to a slower style. That really took them back. I didn't think they expected to be slowed down as much as they were.
Everybody's talked about them already, how good they are. But what impresses you the most about the Warriors? Give me one thing.
They have all bought into a rookie head coach. You would think after the turmoil of, you know, we love Mark Jackson, he's gone because the owners hated him. They just come in and didn't miss a step.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was just they're playing as a team.
But they're still trying to figure it out. You can see
yeah,
that.
They're still figuring out because they don't, in a team full of all-stars, they're acting like they don't have any.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know, they're bringing, you know, Draymond Green is an essential part of Steph Curry. And Bogut is an essential part of Klay Thompson. Each player is playing like a team. Not a Harden plus four, you know, Harden and Howard, and then, you know, miscellaneous.
Okay, Adam Murray. Give me your prediction for the NBA finale.
I said from day one it's going to have to be Cleveland Golden State because not only is it the superstars, you know, LeBron is just not going to lose out, especially just Atlanta. I think, you know, superstars rise up and he will. And Golden State just had, you know, they have too much in the end from day one.
They were the cream of the crop, like you said.
From day one, they just said, we're going to go destroy everybody, and they did. And also, from a storyline standpoint, you have the team that traded for Kevin Love versus the team that didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So now we can listen to every ESPN reporter talk about that for 3 weeks.
Even though
weeks.
Kevin Love has no involvement in the finals on the court.
Yeah, but you got to stay on the air 24 hours somehow.
Yeah, that's typical ESPN, talking about somebody who's not in the finals during the NBA finals. It's very typical of them.
He's probably the player to watch. What's the biggest one? Well, it's Kevin Love, and he's out. What would it mean if he was in there?
Which conference finals are you looking forward to the most?
I'm looking forward to the Western Conference because Atlanta just doesn't excite me and never has, and it'll be a while before they do.
I just want to watch the Warriors. The Warriors are much CTV.
For all those conspiracy theorists, why are you putting your best game on 9 o'clock on the East Coast? Why is your best game wrapping up midnight when people got work in the morning?
Well, when do they start the games for the Western Conference?
Tuesday is at 9 p.m.
So 8. So it might end at 11.
It's 11 Central, 12. What about the people who, you know, got to get up and got to take the train to work? And
I don't know what a train is.
It's one of those things. They just had one that derailed in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah. That one. I thought you were talking about subways for a second. I've never in my life seen a subway.
You need to travel.
I cannot get out of the state. I don't fly. This birdie don't fly. I can't fly.
You need to be a free bird and go.
I'm like Royce White. I have to take the bus everywhere I go.
I know, it's... And here I am, you know. Where's Adam this week? Oh, he's out in Eastern Europe somewhere.
Yeah, he's out in freaking Ireland for 2 weeks, and I'm trying to, like, man a podcast. I think we manned this one okay. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Enjoy the conference finals. We will be back next week. Take care.